There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1043, May 14th, 2024. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say greetings and racing regards from Le Castellet, Paul Ricard country. Going to Monaco Historic was like being in a time machine. We shall explain gladly. Back to you, Prince Rainier of podcasting.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Nasser has a full report on the 14th edition of the Monaco Historics, and it was awesome. I watched the whole thing on YouTube. We shall explain. Wayne Taylor's F1 Monaco experience starts and ends on the grid. Gabriel Torelli and David Puget shared the spoils at the Hockenheim Ring round 3 of Toto's favorite race, the Clio Cup. And this week's interview, ladies and gentlemen, it's Patrick Bernard, business manager at Orica Racing, of course, based out of Paul Ricard. And just a friendly reminder that, yes, we do need your contributions to keep the program up on the cloud. So please click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you'll want to. Nas, I know you've been traveling. You've been with the glitz and glamour. I know it's champagne and caviar for you every day. Give the little people the details.
Well, let me just put it this way. I have yet to experience glitz and glamour. It's more like walking and walking and walking and suffering. But I am loving this suffering. That's for sure. And I am going to tell you, man, watching these Formula One cars from decades ago, and they even had cars from 30s and 40s, but this is like being in a time machine and going back these decades. And this is the time when racing cars sounded like racing cars. And you know, I'm going to tell you something. Monaco being a street race, you can get very close to the action. And I did for some of the time. And these cars, even from the 60s and 70s, man, they are going fast. I could not believe when I saw Adrian Newey in his Lotus 49. I mean, he was going like a racer. Man, these cars are fast. I was very, very impressed. The real thing that stands out, and I was talking to some people, young and old, and we all agreed on one thing. This was the era when racing cars sounded like racing cars, and Dijon Prenois 1979 style of battle was standing operating procedure. Not like calling, oh, he pushed me off, oh, he blocked me. I mean, it's like kindergarten Grand Prix racing these days. And you are lucky that you watched it on YouTube. Man, I did a lot of walking because, you know, there's not much space to sit down. So you're walking and circling like a plane on a holding pattern for like a couple of hours over JFK. I am still very, very tired. But like I said, I'm loving it. And we'll see what we can do and salvage. There were some good points in which we will discuss in a little while. Which cars did you like on TV and the sound from the range of cars they had available?
It was very exciting. Of course, you know, the feed that I was watching was the Automobile Club de Monaco, you know, the Auto Club of Monaco. And their audio was not that great. You couldn't hear the cars that well, but when they got close to their little press box, then you could hear it. And of course, Adrian Newey driving the Lotus 49 was awesome. My other favorite is your buddy from USA, the Bruce Springsteen of Formula One, your buddy Zach Brown, he was driving the FW07 Williams, which was very cool. He wasn't Mr. Tough. And the guy who really dominates during the historics at Monaco is Michael Lewis. I mean, this guy in old Formula One cars is unbelievable, super competitive, at the front, fighting, and then between races, Michael Lewis is running from one car to another car because this guy is so good, he's in demand. So it was fun to watch. It's very competitive. There's crashing. Unfortunately, Wayne Taylor wanted to experience the wonderful love of Monaco, and he bought a Wolf Formula One car. It was beautiful. I say was because he crashed at the start of the Monaco Grand Prix, which was a pain in the ass because there was a lot of red flags the whole weekend. Man, you have to be patient in Monaco because the red flags take a little while to sort. But it was fun to watch. You're not going to believe it, but I watched like 6 hours straight.
Fantastic. And you won't believe this. I walked 6 hours straight. And, you know, speaking of Wayne Taylor, there were quite a few people here with U.S. Connection. You know, he lives in Florida. And I've been watching his career for a long time. So I walked up to his team area, and I asked one of the guys, and, you know, some people are very friendly, and this guy was. And he says, why don't you come before qualifying? And that will be a good time, and he will be here for sure. So as I'm moving around from one bridge to another, I run into Wayne Taylor. And so I said, hey, can we do an interview before qualifying? He says, no, after qualifying will be better. So I thought, you know, he's right. There's no pressure. Qualifying is over. Oh, my God. He must have totally, totally underestimated what it took to drive a 1977 Jody Scheckter Wolf car. And when I met him, I asked him, he says like this, let me change first. So I knew this guy is very tired, right? So finally he changes after 10-15 minutes. We hook up, and after a few questions he says to me, I mean, the guy was just looking very tired, okay? And he says to me, how many more questions you have? So I said, I was feeling sorry for him, and I was tired too myself. I says, can we do three more? He says, okay. So that was the story, and we have quite a few chit-chats, some brief, some extended, which we will be, we have a, you know, nice collection now that we can also spoke to some journalists here and made a lot of fantastic contacts. So we will be hopefully able to play some sort of a conversation every week moving forward. And if all goes well, Mr. Rogers, man, I'm loving south of France. Let me tell you that. Nice is fantastic. The drive to Monaco is very good. But what really blew me away is when I drove from Nice to where I am right. I'm in a small town called, I think it's called Genomes, just like outside Paul Ricard. And I was at Paul Ricard most of the day today. And what happened, I tried to go to the track, and there were, you know, some cars testing, probably sports cars. And the guy said, it's not open today for public, but tomorrow, 10 o'clock, you can come. So that's where I will be on tomorrow. I want to lay my eyes on Mistral Strait. I've heard so much about this thing. And it was used to be over a mile-long strait back in the day. But then, unfortunately, Elio De Angelis lost his life in 86, I believe, in a testing crash. And then they put the chicane. And, you know, they did that for safety, even though his accident did not happen on the Mistral Strait. But it is what it is. We have to just deal with what we have now. So, Mr. Rogers, I was lucky enough to get a nonstop from Tampa to Gatwick on British Airways. And then I flew on their whatever subsidiary is called to Nice. And I got here, I think, yeah, Thursday evening. And Friday, my amigo, Senor Paul Velasco of Grand Prix 247, who used to be a professional photographer for Philip Morris, we took the midday train to Monte Carlo. And like I said, just like Miami, lots and lots of walking. But man, the sound of Matra V12, Lotus 72, Cosworth engine, Ayrton Senna's McLaren Honda, and cars from many, many decades, and also sports cars. They were like Sound of Music to the ears, and it was all worth it. The weather was beautiful, and this event takes place every 2 years, so if anybody is interested, especially in hearing the sound of the old engines and classic, beautiful, beautiful cars, I would highly recommend, and you can take the train. I was staying at a hotel in Nice, which was like 1 minute walk from the train station. So it's very convenient to get there. And if you can, you can also stay at the Novotel right in front of the track in Monte Carlo. So there is a scope here for everybody, every budget. But I will highly recommend a trip to Monaco Historique, especially if you want to hear the sound of beautiful racing engines. And sir, the first person I ran into was Jackie Ickx. And if you recall, we had a extended conversation with him at the 2009 Le Mans race. And every now and then I've run into him, and he's always kind enough to give me a little time. And this is a little chat from Monaco.
Hi, do you remember me?
Of course.
We met at Le Mans.
Yes.
Very nice to see you. How are you?
Nice to see you too. You go everywhere.
I try to. I have a question. You have a minute or two, please?
1 minute, yes.
Sure. You know, you have Lotus, you have Ferrari, you drove for all these teams. What kind of memories come back to you when you see these cars in a
My place? Memories goes to those who made that possible. That these guys.
Mechanics. That is so true.
That's the basic. The rest doesn't count.
And Max Verstappen, born in Belgium.
Max.
What do you think of
Max.
Him? The top. Fantastic. And you're in good health? Look, you look in good health.
I try.
You go to a lot of races?
No. Time to time.
Yeah, time to time.
Just to see, to enjoy.
Yeah. Very good, very good. Nice meeting you again.
Thank you.
All
Stay safe.
It was very thoughtful of him to point to the mechanics who were working on cars and say, these are the people who made it possible. He could have said, memories of having in-flight burritos and chimichangas with Prince Rainier and Princess Grace come back to me every time I am at the Monaco Grand Prix. And I know he used to live in Monte Carlo. He may still be residing here. So it's just a little walk for him now. Now, this will be of interest to you, and I posted a picture on the F1 Weekly Facebook page. I got to see Machismo up close and personal, talking to Zak Brown, and he was not surrounded by his entourage, and I figured when he comes out of this area, people will flock to him and ask for autographs, so I walked a little bit away so I can sort of intercept him solo. But man, as soon as he started to leave the team area, you can imagine the people with selfie sticks, posters, pictures, cars, caps. And I must say he obliged everybody. He was in a good mood. But really, there was no chance to do a interview or a 5-minute brief chat with him. But hopefully one of these days, I am told actually from his own statement that he's much more media and fan friendly. So one of these days, we'll hopefully get a chance to talk to him. And Mr. Zak Brown, I put in a request to McLaren people before I flew out of Tampa, hoping that we will get a time slot. But, his team had just run a race, so that would be a good opportunity. But when I got there, he was there, and his people told me, well, we're waiting to hear from McLaren, so we cannot do anything till they give us approval. So the next day I asked them, can you please send them a reminder that I'm here? And they told me, yes, they will do that. And then shortly afterward, I got an email that we haven't heard from McLaren. So the answer must be no. But that was nice to know, because I always prefer a yes, no, no answer instead of let me think about it, maybe, or the all-time favorite, don't call us, we'll call you, which is absolutely ridiculous. Now, Adrian Newey, of course, man, everybody wanted to talk to him. Machismo was talking to him. Zak Brown came and had a long chat with him. And the usual, there was a lady with him, which I'm pretty sure was his wife. And I was hoping that I can at least, if I cannot go and talk to him, maybe approach her. But, it was just not possible. and I'm not going to do any ambush journalism kind of stuff. That's not my style. Local resident, Charles Leclerc, he was also there, but I did not see him, but I was told that he was surrounded by a big entourage. You know, he lives there, so he must have come down with his buddies and all that kind of stuff. Clive Chapman, son of Colin Chapman, was there with the fleet of nice fleet of Lotus cars. And you know, which was very nice, they had a very big Senna tribute of his entire racing career. His cars from, his go-kart was there, Formula Ford car, Formula 3, Formula 1 cars were there, including the Torben Turbo, which was driven by Stefan Johansson. Bruno Senna drove the McLaren Honda. You know, Senna's sister Vivienne, daughter, were also there. So that was very nice. And you know what happened is, I went to that area on Sunday because I thought I did not have access to that area. And frankly, I did not, because with your regular media, you could not. So this guy, Paul Velasco, got me, you know, the photographer's vest, which gives you more access on Sunday. So I went there and I knew that nobody was going to be here on Monday. So I waited there for 2 hours, okay, just standing and pacing. And then, you know, I gave up. And thanks to Senor Marx Granados, this guy used to be manager of Esteban Gutierrez. Do you remember Esteban Gutierrez raced in Formula BMW race in San Jose many moons ago? I met him around that time, and we have stayed in touch on a regular basis with Marx Granados, and I see him at races now and then. And he has always been good to me. We'll stop and chat and, you know, always updated me with his contact info, this and that. In Monte Carlo, he was working with Adrian Fernandez. You know, he won several IndyCar races. And he recently, just like Wayne Taylor bought a Jody Scheckter Wolf, he bought, he being Fernandez, bought BRM, which was taken to victory at Spa by Pedro Rodriguez. So this was an important car. And it's a very beautiful design from Tony Southgate. So I requested him to get me an audience with Adrian. He said, you know, I will try. And then, sure enough, I think this was on Sunday, but this really worked out very well. And I got an opportunity which I seriously doubt I'll get again. So he sends me a text message saying that we are in Garage 1, which is right opposite to the grandstands, I believe. And he says, we're at the top. So I will come down, let me know when you are there. So I go there, and Senna's car was in garage 12. So I have to go to the other end of the pit, which was garage 1. So I'm waiting for this guy, Marx, to come down, and guess who comes out? Bruno Senna. I could not believe my luck. And he, you know, I've met him a few times, we have interviewed him a couple of times. Again, one of those nice chaps, you know, who always will stop, at least will acknowledge me and say a few words. And then I told him, I said, hey man, I know you're very busy, but it's an important occasion here. Can we do quick 3 questions? And you know, our 3 questions turn into 4 or 5 very easily. And he was very gracious to give me a few minutes. And again, all these interviews are coming up soon. And sir, after the loving was over Sunday night, highlight was my friend and I, we went to a Lebanese restaurant, which was walking distance from my hotel in Nice. And Lebanese food is my favorite. And the name of the restaurant, which caused a lot of giggling, was very interesting. It was called Ishtar. Did you ever see the movie Ishtar?
No.
I have also not seen, but I know what became of it. But I had no choice but to ask the lady working there if the movie is named after the epic production featuring Dustin Hoffman and Warren Beatty. So hopefully one day you will come here and we can go and have some Lebanese food. Another very close encounter, which did not happen because of some family issues, Mika Hakkinen's PR guy, Sami. I had met him in Miami. Mika was there and I told him I'll be here if we can do an interview. He said, yeah, sure, I can try that for you. So I got here, sent him an email, and then he said, yeah, let me see what I can do. We were going to do for Sunday, and then Sunday I did not hear from him. But Monday he was decent enough to send me a message saying, you know, something came up with Mika's family. Can we do it today? And Monday I had already left. So I told him, hey, I'm back in south of France in July. Let's do it then. He says, okay, we should be able to do something then. So that's what's going to happen here, sir. Okay, what else do you have going on here? Okay, Monday morning, I drove to a small town, which is just outside Paul Rica area, Genemos. It's very nice, very quiet. What we're going to play today at the end of the podcast is interview with Mr. Patrick Bernard. He's been working at Oracle for a long time, like 30 plus years. And it's interesting how one thing leads to another. We met in the shuttle bus from the parking lot of Road Atlanta to the media center at last year's Petit Le Mans. And he said to me, if you ever come to South of France, please come visit us. And here I was, you know, talking to him. He showed me the facility, which is very impressive. They are just moving into a new building next door. So he showed me both the old and the new one. And they are, you know, I thought they were just doing a couple of things. They are doing a lot of things. They have a huge fleet of Audi R8s, and they hold special events for and on behalf of Audi. They also manage the Porsche Carrera Cup in France for Porsche, of course. And the Acura GTP car that is being raced in IMSA these days in the U.S. is also basically designed and built by them. And, you know, interestingly, of course, I asked him about racing, how different it is from Europe, and what his thoughts are on coming to the U.S. He does all the endurance races. So we will hear what he has to say when we play the interview. Okay, sir, onward and forward now. Tomorrow morning, I am driving. I'm going to go to Paul Rica first, which is just a 10-15 minute drive from here. And then I am taking a road trip to San Remo, which is very famous for rallying in Italy, of course, not too far from the French border. Continuing journey to Bologna area. And my friend Olivier sent me a text message. He will have some sort of a pass for me at his hotel reception, which I can pick up Thursday night. So let's hope everything works out, and we will see where we end up over this weekend. And then Tuesday, it's back to Tampa, FLA in the USA.
Well, on that note, Nass, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Felipe Massa. You are listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. In now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Okay, sir. Thank you. And we shall start with MotoGP from the Le Mans Bugatti circuit. Obviously, I'm traveling, so I have not watched any of these racing action. But the MotoGP race was dominated by Ducati. They took the top four places with two Spanish riders at the top and two Italian riders third and fourth. Winner by half a second was Jorge Martin over Marc Marquez. So I cannot wait for the first win of the season for Marc Marquez, and the Marc Marquez of four wheels, which is your favorite, Lewis Carl Hamilton. So we'll see how it works out. Okay, WRC, World Rally Championship. It's a new track record for Sebastian Ogier. In winning the Portuguese rally, the French Toyota driver has moved ahead of Finnish driver Markku Allen with most wins in this event. Markku has 5 wins and Sebastian now has 6, and this win was also win number 60 in WRC for Sebastian Ogier. Second was Ott Tanak from Estonia, and third was Belgian Thierry Neuville, both driving for Hyundai. Sir, do you miss Sebastian Loeb from WRC?
Of course I do.
You do? Good. Same here. Okay, now we go to IndyCars from the IMS road course. Alex Palou, who has become muy macho hombre de España on this side of the pond, was the winner for Ganassi Racing. Second was Will Power from Australia, driving for Roger Penske, and third man on the podium was Christian Lundgaard from Denmark, driving for Bobby Rahal, funny man David Letterman, and businessman Mike Lanigan. Palu leads the championship over Power, 152 points to 140. Next, Indy Next. This is IndyCar's version of Formula 2. There were two races past weekend. Winner in race one was Josh Abel, and the winner in second race from Jolly Old England was Louis Foster. Foster is not in the top two in the championship, but he is very quick, and I will not be surprised if he ends up winning the championship. Big news for Miss Jamie Chadwick, the three-time and only Formula W champion, got her first podium in third place in the opening race of the weekend. She is in her second year in this series. There was more female success across the pond. Abby Pulling won a race in the British Formula 4 Championship after having a successful weekend in the F1 Academy races in Miami. And I believe this is the first time a lady driver has won a British Formula 4 race. So, good for her. Now, sir, here is... Remember back in the day when Renault was making cars in the U.S., the slogan used to be, one to watch?
One of my favorites now, sir.
There you go. And I'm sure the Renault Alliance and the Renault Fuego were your dream machines.
For me, it was, Nasser.
That's good. Okay, sir, we have one to watch. This young kid in the USF Pro 2000 series. A few months ago, we interviewed this young American kid from Florida. He lives about 20 minutes from where I am in Tampa.
Hello, I'm Nikita Johnson, and I'm going to be listening to F1 Weekly.
His name is Nikita Johnson. This kid is very talented and only 15 years old. He took pole position for all three races in the series at the Indy Road Course, and he won two of the races and finished third in the other one. It's early in the season, but he's already has a decent lead over second place and much more experienced racer Hunter Yeni, who has 147 points, while Nikita has 235 points. The plan for Nikita this is coming straight from the driver and his papito when we had a lunch in Tampa a few weeks ago, that as soon as he turns 16, he will switch to racing in Europe, and he probably will do something like GB4 or GB3. IMSA, American version of WEC, they were at Laguna Seca in your neck of the woods. Penske team won the race with drivers Nick Tandy and Matthew Jaminet. Formula E, they were in Berlin. Winner in race one was Kiwi Nick Cassidy. In race two, Portuguese Antonio Felix da Costa was the winner for Porsche, while Nick Cassidy finished second for Jaguar. Cassidy leads the championship with 140 points. Second is ex-F1 racer Pascal Wehrlein with 124 points. Sir, do you remember when Pascal and Esteban were evaluated? I believe it was Force India at that time, and they took Ocon over Pascal, saying that Ocon's attitude was much better and positive. Do you remember that?
Indeed, I do.
Pascal was the youngest DTM champion, I think, at the age of 20. And so he was very quick before he got to Formula One. But at that time, a German journalist had told me that this guy has an attitude and thinks he's the second coming of Lewis Hamilton. And sad to say this, I was speaking to another journalist in Monaco, and he basically said the same thing to me, that this kid is very cocky and arrogant, which is kind of sad, because if you have the talent, there is you can just have your right leg do all the talking. There is no need to cop an attitude. That was the Motorsports Mondial in the past. Looking forward, who's going to win the Imola Grand Prix behind Fernando Alonso?
Well, Max will be back in town and proving to everybody that he will put that 10 to 20 second lead back, because it looked like it was diminished. But then, lo and behold, Ferrari's got a huge upgrade package. And Zach Brown, he might have another upgrade. Who knows? But I think it's going to be Max right after Fernando, because it's going to rain. And finally, the Aston Martin will give him the win that we've all been waiting for.
I have not seen the weather forecast. Is it supposed to rain this weekend in Imola?
I haven't a clue, Nasser. I just make this up as we go along. for, some active points in the program.
No, I have to agree. It will be back to business, if not, maybe not by 20 seconds. This is a real driver's track, you know. You know, Ayrton Senna had a lot of pole positions at this track, so that was very impressive. And I think the Ferrari factory is 90 miles down the road from the track, hoping that they will not only come up with some decent upgrades and package, they will not be telling Charles Leclerc to stay on the track while he's in the pit lane. So that will be a big disaster. But I'm expecting some sort of challenge to Max from somewhere, either Ferrari or let's see if McLaren can continue their form. But we'll see. Very, very good and exciting. Oh, man, two people who are on serious slippery slope. There are now reports coming that Kevin Magnussen will be dropped for sure. Well, but at the end of the season, and he now is like, I think, 2 penalty points away from a race ban. So he needs to be very careful. And, of course, your favorite, Logan Sargeant. You see any hope for these two people beyond these races, beyond this race?
No. I mean, Logan Sargeant is definitely overstayed his welcome. So I don't know why he's even around still. Hey, we all have to make a living, right?
Yes, very true.
So another thing, you also spoke with Keith Sutton. I thought that was a very good conversation, Nas. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, you know, Keith Sutton and I, we met first many years ago at the Autosport show, and we recorded a conversation. I don't know what happened. For some reason, the recording got all messed up. It was not very good quality, and he had a lot of, you know, he was very close to Ayrton Senna long before anybody knew Ayrton Senna. And so all of that was captured in this conversation. He was very nice to me. We had a lengthy conversation. And, of course, he does a few races, and he is in Imola also. And then he told me, you know, that he had sold his archive, his what is called his collection of photographs. And that, but he invited me. He still has, his son is doing some work, and he told me where the business is. And he says, next time you're in England, please stop by. So I told him, you know, we come with the entourage, and we all love spicy curry, so he will be invited to some curry action. Yeah, this was very good. You know, made some very good contacts, and this business, like any other business, is all about contacts. And I got a text message today from this gentleman in Sweden who had, who's a friend of Ronnie Peterson's brother. He had told me there is a big historical festival in Karlskoga, which is a racing track, not too far from his home, where I went to Urebro in June. But June, you know, I cannot go. My nephew is getting married. So hopefully, you know, I will hit a lot of places when I come back here in July. Paul Velasco, very surprised to hear me when I told him, you know, I'm not here to watch races. Our job here is to interview people. And we'll try to get as many people. I'm working on some other projects also, staying very, very busy. But man, all this walking is breaking me down, that's for sure. But we are fighters. We are not going to give up.
Well, keep up the good work, Nas. We can't wait for further and future reports. Okay, let's talk about the interview, Nas.
Okay, sir, this is with Monsieur Patrick Bernard. He has been with Orica for over almost 35 years, which is a very long time to be with one employer, and very happy, positive guy, and very, very passionate about motor racing, especially on the technical side. And he has worked with a lot of people over the years. And I'm not sure if you know this French driver, Bernard Trelouyer. He said that he did not come from money, so he helped him stay in his house. And then he became successful and raced in Japan for many years. And he said he can put me in touch with some other people also racing related. So I told him, you know, when I come back in July, we'll have some foie gras and pastis, and you can give me some contact information. And he says to me, well, I mentioned to him that I've been trying to get in touch with Alain Prost. And Alain Prost, in his junior days, raced with Orica, with this gentleman who owns the company, Hugh Deschenaux. So he said, when you come back in July, I can ask my boss, see if we can get you in touch with him. So we'll see what happens. So this conversation took place at the Orica office here at Paul Ricard. Many thanks to Patrick for his time and showing me the whole place. Very, very interesting, very, very impressive place. So hopefully our listeners will enjoy this conversation, and we will be back next week.
Okay, folks, I'm here at Orica in beautiful south of France with Monsieur Patrick Bernard. Patrick, thank you for your invitation. Thank you for the great welcome, and thank you for the tour. How are you today?
I'm very lucky guy, because every day I'm happy to live, to do my job in motorsports, and it's a pleasure to welcome you to visit our factory.
Now, Orica was started in 1973, and I had a nice chat with Mr. Hugh Deschanok at Le Mans some years ago. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the main activities of the group for our listeners these days. I see a lot of cars for different manufacturers here.
Correct. In fact, at the beginning, Orica was a race team, if I can say this, and we are a chance to exploit each racing car. After, we try to develop also a shop, and now we have a big shop with racing parts, turnover around 20 million of euro, just for information, and also different activity like events, like we can also receive some special people for special events, etc.
And I also saw a fleet of Audis. You do event management for Audi also?
Yeah, correct. We are in charge for Audi to present their products and to test the car with their best customer, journalist, or some people like this.
And you're also involved with Porsche in some of the series here in France?
Yeah, in France, Orica, since a long time, I don't remember exactly, maybe 12 or 15 years, we are in charge to organize Porsche Carrera Cup French Championship.
Great. Now, Orica built the Acura GTP car for IMSA. Question I have is, when a big manufacturer comes to Orica, do they come with the design of the car, or does Orica do all the design work? How does that work?
From a technical point of view, we are building the design by ourselves. But we have also to respect the request from the customer. And for example, that you took Acura, we have to have the same signature of the headlamp for the rear and for the front. It was the same for Alpine, if you are regarding Alpine. And this is a signature, this is a LED signature, which is very important. After, you need performance. But you have to discuss with the marketing people also.
You know, the Alpine rear lights, they have the A logo, the Alpine.
Yeah, correct.
That is beautiful.
Yes, it's very original. And I think all the manufacturers are looking to have the best logo, if I can say this. If you are regarding the BMW LMDH in IMSA, it's a beautiful car. But immediately you can see, it's a BMW.
Yeah. Now, let's say any company signs a contract to build a GTP car for them. From the signing of the contract to actual delivering the car, how much time is required?
It depends. But for example, when we have produced the Rebellion car, mm-hmm. we just need, I think, 9 or 10 months. And the car was on the track after. And we start for a white sheet at the beginning.
Yeah. So it's not like a 90-day turnaround.
Yeah, no, correct.
Okay, WEC series is very strong today, with Ferrari, Porsche, Alpine and Peugeot all having factory programs. Has this put extra pressure on Toyota and Orica to produce a strong challenger to face the competition? And thank you for telling me that you are involved with Toyota.
Yeah. In fact, Orica is looking always the best performance for the car, and all is done, all is built to have the better car.
Okay. And do you have people here from your major customers like Ferrari and Alpine also overseeing the project or working with your engineers?
Yes, effectively right. For example, for Alpine, when we built the first car, mm-hmm. some mechanics from Alpine came here and to learn the car, because they don't know by heart the car like us. That's why for the first car in January for Acura, for BMW that we have worked, or for other brand, for the first car, all the staff from the customer is coming to build the car with our mechanics.
Okay. Mazda was the first Japanese car to win at Le Mans. Was that car also built by Orica?
No. For your information, I was pit boarder for the car was 124 of Le Mans in 1991. And this car came directly from Japan. And during maybe 1 month, we received 10 Japanese guys. They worked, they learned, they work, they eat, and they sleep here. And but the car was directly from Japan. We were in technical support like Toyota.
Okay, so Oreca was providing technical support. Now, Acura is a brand of Honda, and Honda's big crosstown rival is Toyota. Oreca has a strong partnership with Toyota in WEC. How long have you been collaborating with Toyota?
I don't want to do a mistake, but I think it's...
approximately
12 or 13 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Now, in Formula One, we normally hear the number two driver complain that he's not going fast because the car was designed around the number one driver.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in sports car racing, there are two or more drivers per car. Does the design of the car involve any input from the drivers, or the drivers have to adapt to the car themselves?
The driver has to adapt the car for themselves, because you cannot have a setup especially for the driver number one, and after the driver number two cannot exploit the setup. For example, if you are preferring to have a car who was a little bit oversteering, it will be more comfortable for you, but for me it will be not the case. I prefer understeering, for example. Mm-hmm. That's why you have to manage and to have a medium range, and to explain to each driver, okay, you have to use the car like she is.
Okay.
It's not like a single seater. You are alone in a car, and you are just the one driver.
Cool. In all the times you have been in racing, and please tell us how long you've been in racing, who are the drivers who have been very good in technical understanding and feedback?
It's difficult to explain that from my point of view, because I'm not a technical guy, sorry, but I have discussed a lot with some drivers, and for example, my driver who I prefer is Benoît Trélier, because this guy has won 3 times, 24 Hours of Le Mans with Audi LMP1, and at the beginning of his career, I discovered he was just only 17, and he doesn't have any money. And during the test on the Paul Ricard track, I asked him to come to my home, and I will give him a bed to avoid to spend some money in hotel, restaurant, etc. And since this time, we stay very close, and I was very emotive. Is it correct?
Yeah.
When he has won his first 24 Hours of Le Mans, because I discovered this young guy at 70, and after I was at Le Mans, and he won Le Mans, and for me it was great, great history, great moment, and a little bit proud of me, because I have helped this young driver with my home, with my bed, etc.
Now, what is he doing now? He's the one who raced in Japan also quite a bit, right?
Yeah, correct. He stayed in Japan for Formula, Super Formula, and after he was official Audi driver.
Is he still racing?
No, he stopped. No, he's in charge for a beautiful factory that he built. The name is Conciergerie, and his target is, for example, if you have a beautiful old Ferrari since 50 years, you can put your Ferrari in his garage, he will manage the car, and when you want to use his car, place a phone call, okay, Benoit, can you prepare my Ferrari for this weekend? I will come from Brazil or Karachi, for example, or for 1 week in France to test the wine, red wine and my Ferrari, and back after at Karachi or...
Yeah, believe it or not, there are Ferraris and Bugattis in Karachi also. Yeah, thanks for that reference. Okay, now question. You're involved in IMSA racing with Ferrari customer service area.
Yeah.
Tell our listeners a little bit about Oreca and Ferrari connection. And also what, how cheap the parts are, which I found very interesting.
the most cheaper part, it's a wiper. For example.
How many thousands?
No, a wiper, it's the cheapest part, maybe 100 euros.
Oh, thanks a lot.
It's not very... No, Rick has a good connection also with Ferrari since a long time. And this is Ferrari, was requested to Rick to build the Ferrari. And also because, for example, F Corse is using LMP2 cars. That's why when they receive their car, they discover, okay, the prototype is perfect, etc. And... there is also maybe a small fight between Michelotto and some also famous Italian factory. because maybe it's curious that it's a French company who has the market.
Yeah.
But I think we have the right boss to do the job, and he's very at a high level. Dushanak is very high level for that.
Okay. What is your opinion of American racing scene compared to the European racing scene?
First, I would like to explain I love racing, that's all. But after 25 years in European Championship, and I know all that, when I discover the motorsport in USA, for me it's totally different. And first, it's more sympathetic because all the garages are open, all the people are working very closer. The other thing is all is done for the fan. It's not like at 24 Hours of Le Mans, where all is closed, you have to show your password every 10 meters, for example. All is open. And also because the look of the car, the look of the driver suits, the look of the trailer are more beautiful for me. And also because I love USA. I don't know for which reason, but I love this country.
That's good. And which one do you prefer, hot dogs or cheeseburgers when you are in America?
French food, French wine, foie gras. No, American. In USA, this is the only bad thing is the food at the end.
Okay. On both sides of the pond, what are your top three favorite tracks? And if you said you're not, on the technical side, but if you can help me on this question, what do you think are the tracks which are most difficult to set up for endurance sports car racing, or more challenging?
For me, with my humble history, and one more time, I'm not a technical guy, but I think some to have the right setup, for example, for Laguna Seca, must be very difficult. Also for Sebring.
Yeah.
And maybe also I'm thinking at Spa in Belgium.
Yeah. Now, this question, since you helped Benoit Treluer, might be of interest to you. France is home to the very first Grand Prix, going back 1906, Le Mans 24-hour race, famous tracks like Paul Ricard and Clermont-Ferrand, and Le Professeur Alain Prost remains the only French world champion. What will it take to change that, and who do you think will be the next French Formula One world champion?
Difficult to see now who can be here in Formula One after Alain Prost. Or difficult to see a driver in France now at this time. And I think it's a cycle. Like there is 10 years ago, there is a lot of German people. Before a lot of French people like Ron Arnoux, Jacques Lafitte, Alain Prost, etc. I think. It's a cycle and it's changing, and maybe in 2 or 3 years we will discover a new guy. Like if you're regarding in MotoGP, there is a young guy, his name is Pedro Acosta. He's just only 18 or 19, and he is fighting with the best of the guy like Banaya, like Marc Marquez, etc. That's why maybe we can have a Verstappen, but not here, maybe in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, that would be great. Okay, finally a question about Monsieur Patrick Bernard. What part of France are you from, and what was the first Formula One Grand Prix you ever went to?
I'm from south of France, and I start my career in 1988 at the downstairs. And each year I learn a lot of different things. And because I'm very curious, and I have traveled also all over the world, and it gave me a good overview of each culture, each motorsport area, each people, etc. And for me, it was a great time to meet a lot of different people, different cultures, etc. When I was in South Africa, I was alone in China, 3 weeks alone in China. It was not very easy because it's not your country, etc. But I was very happy to, and always I'm very happy to meet different people like you. Like, I think we have to share what we are doing, etc. And I don't have any secret. If a guy is asking me something, I will give him. I will give the solution, and I will not keep the information just only for me like this.
And what was the first Formula One race you ever went to, and if you recall that event?
My first Formula One GP was in 1989, Formula One Paul Ricard track, and I remember between noon and 2 p.m., We were on a, because the track was always open. There is 30 years ago, and I remember Senna in a senior curve was flat throttled, and Mansell and Prost. You can heard maybe they're losing 100 or maybe 100 RPM, yeah. And it was famous because I think Senna has big balls. And for me, it's a god. For me, it's a god, better like Schumacher, but. It's difficult to compare, yeah. Because it was not the same years, etc. Yeah. But for me, because I discovered Formula One in 1985, and with this whole lot of times, for me, Senna is staying the best.
Merci beaucoup.
You are welcome. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Patrick, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser, keep up the good work. Get some rest. Enjoy Imola. I want to thank everybody who listens. Good night.
Bye-bye. Thank you.